Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wowee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Well, hello everybody. It's time for the Thursday edition of the Duff and Quarters podcast, or as it is at the moment, the Duff and Skeeter Reddings podcast. We're in the studio here. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Gamble responsibly and please call Gambler's Help on 1-800-858-858. So it's me, Skeet and Josh in the studio today, and we're going to try and talk you through round five of AFL action, try and tip you a couple of winners and talk about a few of the issues bubbling around. Skeet, what's caught your eye over the last couple of days?
What's caught my eye is the front of pre-game today in the West Australian, Bulls, Bears and Eagles, which has got a shot of Adam Simpson looking as if he's a stockbroker, and then beneath him, Andrew Gaff on the phone, supposedly, and Jerry McGovern looking a little bit betwixt and between with his emotions there, but just a bit of colour and lightheartedness heading towards this Friday night classic, I hope, between the Eagles and Collingwood. Kane Corns having his say, as he always does, never pulls his punches, but yeah, a bit to read and a bit to digest as part of that. But yeah, I suppose the big issue over the past 24 hours, and you were right across it having watched Eddie Maguire
On Footy Classified.
On Footy Classified, and the list at the Magpies where it's at, and quite defensive of where Collingwood sits on that front. It has sat because obviously it was under his reign that a lot of these decisions were made.
It was quite funny. I just watched the replay of it, and there was Sam McClure, and Eddie took umbrage at Sam McClure saying that their list management had been a debacle. And fired up very quickly. There was a very poker face Ross Lyon sitting in the middle of it, sort of a not buying into any of it. I think Eddie needs to let this go. It's whether their list management is a debacle. Certainly, their salary cap management was a debacle, and that ties into list management. Eddie's point was, well, we made a grand final in 2018, nearly won it. We were a kickoff being in a grand final in 2019. You know, we won a big final in Perth in 2020. How can you say our list management has been a debacle? Well, the salary cap management was a debacle because they had to sell Adam Treloar for virtually nothing, who had, you know, 3 or 4 years of a contract to run, and by anyone's reasonable estimation is one of their 7 or 8 best players, and he's playing very nicely at the Western Bulldogs. Now, clearly, when you're going after a flag, you do sort of push a few salary cap issues further down the road, trying to push an event like this out the back, and it may be that as Eddie predicted, it may be that other clubs will find themselves in a similar boat and have to do a similar thing. And certainly GWS have had to do that, haven't they? Interestingly, these things tend to follow Gubby Allen around the AFL. Where Gubby has been, there will be a salary cap issue. Gubby is a genius at building lists, but he's maybe leaves the sums to someone else, because certainly he's been consulting at St Kilda in the last couple of years, and they have been bringing in a lot of highly paid talent as well. Certainly worked at Collingwood and worked at GWS before then. So it's an interesting little tidbit.
And it's a good footy debate as to which list you'd like to be in control of. Obviously, a team that's at the top of the ladder is going well. But, for instance, if you're comparing someone like Alistair Clarkson, who has Hawthorn's list, as opposed to, say, Justin Longmuir, who's got Fremantle's list, whose list would you prefer? There's those types of discussions which are great for those of us involved with footy, but the answers can be, or the opinion can be differing.
Yeah, and clearly you prefer to be young if you're, you know, it's like there's nothing worse than being old and out of the eight.
You can err on being young, and then you've got time to develop and become a better side because of those factors which invariably come to the fore.
So I suspect Collingwood are not far away from going younger. Yeah, you know, they picked an old team last week. They were disappointing. when you are disappointing with an old team, the critics come very quickly for you. They've come very quickly for the Pies over the last 6 or 7 days, which will worry the Eagles because they came very quickly for St Kilda the previous week. You can light a fire under a team when you do this. Jordan Dugowie, I wrote a piece on Jordan Dugowie in pre-game today. The critics have come for Jordan Dugowie as well. Basically, in brief, we know how well Jordan Dugowie can play. It's the question is, does he play well often enough? And the answer is, according to Kane Corns and Lee Matthews, no.
He hasn't been well terrible enough this year, but he hasn't been living up to the price tag that Correct. He's being paid. So absolutely, if you are prepared to accept the extra dollars, I think you're prepared to, you have to accept the extra responsibility and extra pressure that comes with that. And just going back to your point you made about the fire being lit under sides, and we know last week it was St Kilda, the Giants have been through it, they responded. Carlton, there's been half a dozen clubs already this season that have felt that type of heat. Surely coaches and players don't still buy into that in terms of putting, for want of a better term, the article in the dressing room before a game or during the week. Surely that is a 30 or 40 year ago way to respond to these types of matters.
They always say we don't look for outside motivators, and they absolutely do. And it's not the cake, but it is the little bit of icing they put on the cake at the end of their preparation. Oh, and by the way, you know, this is what they're saying about us. That absolutely happens. Now, they don't make that the main thrust of there because it wears thin. But every now and again, when you're looking for an edge and a little pump up in intensity, it doesn't hurt to remind people what's being said about them. It's human nature.
But does that mean that coming to WA, and Collingwood's a good travelling team, I noticed Levi Greenwood's one of the players who's flying across early for tomorrow night's game. Does that mean that Collingwood might use that in some form this week? I mean, if you do that, you leave yourself not much room to move in 3 or 4 weeks if it happens again.
Do you make it a big deal, or do you just make sure the players are aware of it and then let it, you know, just sort of fester away inside?
Sure, the players are aware of it. I mean, unless they...
Of course they are.
Unless they're completely oblivious. And I do believe some players don't read the papers, don't watch the TV, and I get it. I do get that. But
some of them just look at the pictures.
Some of them look at the pictures. Some of them also, I can tell you, most of their families read the paper and look at the TV, and they'll have a mother or a father or a brother or sister say, hey, listen, you know, Mark Robinson from the Herald Sun, Mark Duffield from the West Australian, they've written this about you. And again, it gets back to players.
Yeah, I think so. So Levi Greenwood, you mentioned that. Now, this is interesting, I reckon, Skeet, because Levi Greenwood played on Tim Kelly, I think, in the final last year, did a good job on him. They will think that if they can nut Tim Kelly and there's no Luke Shuey and there's no Elliot Yeo, and then Andrew Gaff, well, Kane Corns has written a column on Andrew Gaff, and Andrew Gaff is, you know, he, according to Kane Corns, getting his possessions too wide and too deep in defence. They will think they've put a hole in West Coast midfield. So that's going to be an interesting matchup, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We talked about Darcy Moore not going forward in the podcast the other day. We would keep him back because of the Eagles having all those tall targets. Got an interesting tweet from a bloke, Matty, who said he was doing a bit of having a bit of fun with words, and, you know, basically they need more of more. They need more to go forward and more to go back.
Well, they do. That's simplistic and unrealistic way to look at it. But I think, as we said before, against the Eagles, it's too big an ask for the rest of the defence to look at Kennedy, Allen, Darling as a possibility to shut down when you've got Darcy Moore in attack. I can't see that being an option for Nathan Buckley tomorrow night. But moving forward against other teams that aren't so well blessed, that has to be, particularly if Collingwood's struggling to kick a score, which they are.
So we're told that Alex Witherden will make his debut for West Coast. That's the logical thing, I think. Shannon Hearn comes out. Witherden, a bloke who's a good ball user, he comes in to take Hearn's place. So that, if I was Alex Witherden and it had been Luke Foley put in the team, and I'd been bought in to be the player in reserve for people like Shannon Hearn and Brad Shepherd, I would have been seeking a meeting with the coach, I think, to find out just exactly where I stood. So look forward to seeing him. He's a good ball user. He'll be a steady influence back there. He's an experienced player, so don't expect him to be overwhelmed by the big occasion. If you're West Coast, knowing that they're going to go after Kelly and knowing that they have the defenders to match up on your tall forward, so we would think that Jeremy Howe probably gets Jack Darling. We would think Jordan Roughhead might get Josh Kennedy. And maybe Darcy Moore goes to Oscar Allen. That's probably how they'll do it, I reckon. So how are you going to get an edge on them, given that those three tall forwards are a big plus for the Eagles in most games, and given that Collingwood may also have the tools in Greenwood to shut down one of your primary mids.
And Greenwood is one of those genuine players. You can say Mark Hutchings when he's in the Eagles side, a run with Rob, but Levi Greenwood is a genuine stopper in the AFL, old-fashioned term, isn't he?
He's your Ryan Crowley.
He is your Ryan Crowley without some of the niggle that perhaps goes on. Maybe there is some of that Greenwood's got in his kit bag. You're right, though. The Eagles, if Greenwood does go to Kelly, and even if he performs his job to 60% of his capacity or what Nathan Buckley wants, it does ask the question of these other players in the Eagles' midfield, Dom Sheed, Jack Redden, Andrew Gaff, to step up and find more of the footy and be more productive with the footy. And that was their knock against St Kilda. We talked about the fact they left out a player like Xavier O'Neill, who ideally would have been the like-for-like swap for Shuey, which didn't eventuate. Do they need to change that up a bit in the Eagles' midfield against Collingwood tomorrow night? Or do you think at home, they're just a vastly different, the way they play the ground, the way they play at home will change the dynamics of that Eagles set up inside the centre square?
I'm predicting Andrew Gaff will have a big one, because I think he does – Andrew Gaff's a very steady player and a very consistent player, like probably West Coast's most consistent player over the last 4 or 5 years, I think. You know, his top end isn't quite what Luke Shuey's might be or Josh Kennedy's might be, but he is at a level – a pretty steady level most of the time. Now, he was a bit scratchy in a couple of games this year, had a big one against Port, and then was scratchy along with everybody, it must be said, last weekend. I think, and given that Andrew Gaff's had a bit of a fire lit under him by Kane Corns, I think we will see the best of Andrew Gaff, and Andrew Gaff will push further inside to get his kicks, and he'll push further forward to get his kicks and try and be more incisive and try and be more damaging. That's how I think they'll try and cover it. Dom Sheed's a very underrated player. You know, he uses the ball so well. He's not quick, but he uses the ball well. He's dangerous around goal. He doesn't miss many. And I think Jack Redden's a very honest player. You know, you know what you're going to get from Jack Redden most weeks. So they've still got a good midfield there. And let's not forget that Collingwood come in without Taylor Adams, who was their best and fairest winner last year. And he's a massive part of what they try and do. So, you know, if you look at the Collingwood team as it would be at its best from 12 months ago, with a Treloar, maybe with a Jaden Stevenson, maybe with a Tom Phillips, and with a Taylor Adams being their best player.
It's a different look, isn't it?
It's a different team, and all those players would have a role somewhere in the middle. I think the key for West Coast is going to be making sure that Jordan DeGoey doesn't have a Dusty Martin sort of game, because Jordan DeGoey can be Dusty Martin. He's just not Dusty Martin that often.
No, and I've got reasonable confidence that Brad Shepherd, someone like him, has the tools to shut down DeGoey, or at least keep him at arm's length on the scoreboard. That's where he's going to hurt you. So I think Adam Simpson would be pretty, not comfortable, but that's the player who you trust in. And I think that's the way they'll go with him. Interesting, I talked to Aaron Black from West Perth yesterday just about the likes of Tom Mitchell, and Aaron got 43 touches against the Eagles in the Waffle the other week. And we were joking about, you know, racking up the numbers. And there's been criticism often of Gaff getting 30 plus and what does he do with them, and Tom Mitchell the same. Aaron's response to that was, he said, you know what, I think it's still those types of players, and he, I think, even considers himself one of those. They've got a really good place in the modern game still, because to keep providing your forwards and getting the ball into the hands of players like Black and Mitchell, he's a bit surprised by the criticism of some of these AFL players that are knocked for getting it 30, 40 times. Yet some players are more damaging, but he's of the belief that if Andrew Gaff, for instance, gets it 30, 34 times, the Eagles are a better side for him doing that, as opposed to him not being as prolific as what we know he can be.
You know how you know when you work out how valuable those players are? When you haven't got them.
Absolutely.
And you're minus 35 touches in the midfield.
Absolutely.
That's when you know. Like if, you know, I think Xavier O'Neill's a nice player and I think he'll develop into a good player. But right now, if Xavier O'Neill has it 15 times in a game, then he's probably feeling like, okay, I did okay.
Mm.
So if Andrew Gaff came out and Xavier O'Neill went in, you're minus 20 disposals. And those disposals, Andrew Gaff is an assembly line player, isn't he? He'll get it at the back end. He'll kick it to someone. He doesn't turn it over. And then he'll push up the ground and he'll reappear in the passage of play somewhere further up. And he won't turn it over then. He'll make sure that you keep it and you get it further forward. That's when you know you've got a valuable player when he's not there anymore.
Exactly.
All right, let's see if we can tip a few winners, Skeet. And I looked at your tipping, mate, and you're not going that bad.
Yeah,
you were a bit disparaging of yourself the other day.
Well, it's always better to be someone who is self-disparaging and able to take the mickey out of themselves when it comes to footy tipping, because the start of the weekend can be ruined in part by an horrific tip. And it's happened to me about five times already. We're only into round five. When it comes to Thursday nights, Friday nights, those 50-50 games, like last week, for instance, stuff. Carlton v Gold Coast, I've tipped the Gold Coast. And I knew through the game, they're not going to get up here, the Gold Coast, they're gone. And of course I tipped the other 50-50 was Geelong, going on trust and going on the support that you've given them, and I trust your judgment, that they're going to be a premiership side. I thought, no, Duffs can't be that far off the mark. Well, you are, and Melbourne towed them up.
Well, clearly you don't listen when we're in the podcast because I tip Melbourne.
I know. But, yeah, so we're about to right the ship this week.
All right, so St Kilda versus Richmond tonight. Tab Touch has Richmond at $1.48 for this one, St Kilda at $2.65. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that very rarely do the Tigers lose three in a row. By the way, the Saints coming off that five-day break, Richmond, let's be honest, they were pretty good against Port Adelaide away from home. My heart says that Richmond's going to have the tools to beat St Kilda. But this is one of those games, if you're doing your tipping, you put Richmond almost 9 times out of 10. But if the Saints show something like they did last week, then they'll be in this game for a long time. Richmond for me, but with the caveat that they play at their optimum, because if this game's the MCG, for instance, I'm thinking it's Richmond comfortably.
Yeah, I think Richmond, as you say, teams that have won three flags don't lose three in a row very often. And, you know, they got jumped and were disappointing against Sydney, but that was an absolute cracker of a game against Port Adelaide last week. You wouldn't walk away from that thinking any less of Richmond than you thought going in, I think, to play that way against Port Adelaide in Adelaide. St Kilda were very good. That St Kilda is the team we expect St Kilda to be most weeks, not 1 week in four. So let's see if they can back it up and make this interesting. But I think you'd want to be on the Tigers.
Yeah, and also in Jack Steele, terrific last week. They had players stand up when required. But for me, it's about the trust factor moving forward. Can they do it 2 weeks in a row? You talk about the fire being lit. It was lit under the Saints last week and they responded. The Eagles, really, 33 points up, shouldn't be losing that game.
Mm.
So I'm not sure that Richmond will allow them to either get back into the game or provide the options for their forwards as the Eagles did last Saturday afternoon.
Isn't he a good player, Jack Steele?
Mm.
Works both ways. And you know what? We talked about Andrew Gaff being consistent. Jack Steele turns up every week. So even when the Saints were going ordinary in those first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, their best player in those games was Jack Steele, and still their best player when they have a really good one against West Coast last weekend. All right, so we're both on the Tigers. So Friday night, Optus Stadium, West Coast versus Collingwood. West Coast at $1.38 with Tab Touch, Collingwood at $3.05. Can you mount a case for the visitors?
Well, history says you can, because they play pretty good footy here in Perth.
They've won two of the last three.
Absolutely. They've won five of the seven Friday night matches between the two sides. And I don't think they're intimidated by travel or Optus Stadium. So that being said, as I talked to you before the Port Adelaide game, the trust factor and if you tip against the Eagles at home and you get rolled, you wake up the next morning and say, why? Why did I doubt that they'd be competitive if not win? And that's the same here. Question marks about them, though, given their absence of Yo and Shuey. That's going to be a bit more long term. But can the Eagles midfield respond to what happened last week and correct that? I think they can, or get enough supply to the forwards at home to get a result. But Collingwood, I think will be in this game for a long time.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be fascinated to see what sort of Collingwood comes out, because Collingwood plays in a lot of big games. They're not overawed by the atmosphere. You know, I think it's such a big production, a West Coast home game, particularly a night game at Optus Stadium.
And a Friday night, because, I mean, we know the fixtures aren't drawn up for the rest of the year as such, but this could be potentially the one and only Friday night game we get in Perth, which is a pity, which is a shame. We love it, even though it's a, you know, if Victorians had to go to the footy at 6:10 on a Friday night, there'd be an uproar about getting from work and getting kids home and getting the footy. We don't understand the time difference, so that's a programming thing with TV. Get that. But wouldn't we love some more marquee matches like this, particularly while the Eagles are going well, and this hopefully will be one of those great Friday night games, because there are not too many. There was a Sunday game, was it last year or the year before, where the Pies kicked the first three or four, then the Eagles steamrolled them, won by 8-9 goals.
Yep.
But by and large, these two sides know each other back to front. They've seen so much of each other. It's a bit like Sydney West Coast in that 2005-2006 period where there wasn't more than a couple of kicks between them. I'm hoping it's like that tomorrow night.
Well, you and I were both out at Jeremy McGovern's press conference the other day, and he said the teams match up well. They've had some really interesting games. Mason Cox has been a fascinating figure in some of these games, you know, gave it to the crowd last year, I think. Gov sort of said that didn't bother him. I reckon he might have a whisper in Mason Cox's shell-like ear, I think, if he gets on top of him early. I reckon he might just say, oh, mate, you're not really paying much attention to the crowd today.
No, but we do love, look, Mason's an American, and the Yanks have that feeling of we'd like to give a bit of colour and character. I don't mind Mason Cox in that sense. I think that's great. I'm just not sure that I'm comfortable with him being your primary target against the likes of...
Yeah, I think De Goey's the key forward. I think if West Coast takes care of De Goey, I think they'll take care of the Pies.
Yep.
If De Goey has the sort of game where he can kick four or five and the others can kick their one or two around him, Collingwood might get to 12 or 13 goals and make this a really close battle. If they don't, I reckon even with Collingwood's tall defenders being well equipped to play on... you know, the likes of Allen, Kennedy and Darling, you've still got Liam Ryan, you've still got Jamie Cripps, you've still got Tim Kelly drifting forward for scoring opportunities. I suspect West Coast will get their 14 or 15, and that might be a couple of too many goals for Collingwood to kick.
Yep, agree totally.
All right, so West Coast for both of us. Sydney versus GWS, the Sydney Derby, the Battle of the Bridge, or whatever they want to call it. The Swans don't like it being called the Battle of the Bridge.
Why is that?
I think they got a bit territorial when GWS came in and started having a couple of wins against them, and they got a bit gnarly and nasty about, you know, hang on a minute, this is, you know, it was almost like we already own the bridge. How is there a battle for the bridge? And this has suddenly become an interesting game. So GWS is vastly improved form last week. We suspect Sydney might be due for a bit of a downer, as young teams sometimes do. You know, they've been up for a month now. So can you make a case for GWS? Tab Touch can't. They've got them at 280 and the Swans at $1.45.
Yeah, I think if this game wasn't at the SCG, you'd find a bit more love for the Giants on that front. I go back to last week at the MCG, and Toby Green, so much the barometer, and you talked about him being captaincy material long term, and there's a bit to be said from what he produced last week, that if he has that effect on the rest of the side, we don't know that, but you can only go on how they played and the energy that they came out with, that's going to be a result moving forward for them that's quite positive for Toby and the team. A couple of outs for Sydney. Isaac Heaney is big with that hand injury.
Yeah, finger. Yep.
Finger, so he's out. They do, though, have...
Dane Rampey as well.
Yep.
That is a big out.
Yeah, so they've got a couple of outs that leave you with some concerns. Franklin, Reed, still in there. I agree. They've been up for, 4 weeks now, the Swans. And I think for a side, we've talked to their youth being so good and so able to respond in the early part of the season. But we know at some stage there's going to be a blip in the radar. We think there is. Whether it comes on Saturday night or Saturday afternoon remains to be seen. I still will stick with the Swans selection-wise, only because that memory of that game against the Dockers at Optus Stadium still burns in the back of my brain.
Scarred you, hasn't
well,
it?
Well, yes. It'll take me a while to get over that, I would have thought, and pick the Giants with any confidence. Sydney have been shown me enough to suggest that at the SCG they can eke out a win.
I'm going to go with Sydney, and I'm going to use your method, Skeet, where I'm going to say, what's going to make me angrier if I get this wrong? And I'm definitely going to be angrier about tipping GWS if Sydney get up and win this one. I think that Sydney will be they'll go in favourites. They're deserving favourites. We think Buddy plays in this game. We're told that he plays. So that's going to be another sort of big name player they're going to have to counter. I'm going to be fascinated to see how the young Sydney players handle an occasion like this where, you know, a derby always has a bit of an edge. And with Toby tossing the coin, it'll have a little bit more of an edge.
Physical.
He'll make it physical for those, if any of those young blokes get near him, he'll be making sure he makes some sort of physical statement to them. You know, a player that GWS has who's quietly emerging, I reckon, is Lockie Ash. Played a great game off halfback last week. He's got real speed. He's got a bit of courage about him, intercepts well, and gives them some real bounce off the back. And his emergence, I reckon, in that role gives you a bit of confidence that the loss of Heath Shaw won't be felt as keenly as it looked like it might be felt for a few games. So I'm going to tip Sydney by, I reckon, under 20 points, but it should be an interesting game.
Yep. Giants, if they can carry that form from the MCG, then perhaps their season can be rectified. You're looking through the tips in the pre-game here. Anyone tip the Giants? Couple did.
Well, I've just lost my screen where it had my Tab Touch odds on it, so I have to look at see what the next game is. The next game I think we're tipping on is Western Bulldogs versus Gold Coast.
Well, we won't probably linger too long on this. The Gold Coast Suns playing at Marvel Stadium, they've coughed up a lot of points over the years there. The Bulldogs midfield, we think that they're going to keep humming along. This shouldn't present too many problems for them on paper. I think it's all about whether they can mentally just keep churning out the same type of performance, because we know that if they play at their optimum, they beat the Gold Coast Suns on the weekend. If the Bulldogs just have a moment where they arrive at the ground feeling comfortable with themselves and the Suns can play some decent footy, it could be competitive. But we don't know that.
So we think they are more competitive, but they're 1-3.
Yep.
Their win is over North Melbourne. They were competitive against Carlton, but Carlton, as you say, always looked the more likely winner in that game. Dogs are $1.13 with Tab Touch, Gold Coast $6. So if they lose this, as we think they will, they slip to 1-4. When do we start to see Gold Coast, with all this young talent, when do we start to see them make some ground? Now, we know there are issues. They lost Matt Rowell, very early on in round one. They've lost all of their ruckmen, and they'll be definitely hunting a ruckman in the mid-season draft. So watch out for maybe a waffle ruckman to get snapped up in that lot, because I don't think there are many ruckmen in the Sandful. And you know why? Because they have the last touch rule. So there are fewer stoppages. So the art of ruck work in the Sandful has actually taken a bit of a dip. So there is a very strong chance that Gold Coast will get they've actually got four spots on their list, I think. So they may even pick a couple of ruckmen from the Waffle and see if they can get one of those two guys up and going for the rest of the season.
And we've talked about some of the ruck candidates in the Waffle. Scott Jones and Corey Galt, East Perth and Swan Districts respectively, have both played some AFL footy. Galt, by the way, though, is 28 years of age. So I suppose if it's short term, not such an issue. Luke Stranatica, I saw him play for East Fremantle last week. He's 203 centimetres. So he looked okay. And from a short term scenario, could be an option. A Zhang, as you mentioned last week.
I reckon Will Schofield might have done a Zhang yes. a grave disservice by completely outplaying him while being played as Peel's makeshift ruckman in the Waffle last week.
That is very true. The player that I think, and again, we might have touched on this guy from South Fremantle, Zach Strom. He's played 119 AFL games. He's 198 centimetres. Now, I always picture him as being a bit shorter than that, but Zach Strom, at 27 years of age, he would be, to me, if you are short of a ruckman or ruck option, but someone who can also play other areas of the ground pending your requirements, I'd be tempted of that group to have a look at him first.
Yeah, I reckon the ones I would look at would be Corey Galt, because he's mature, he's an accomplished player, and you kind of know you're going to get a certain level from him. I'd be keen to have a look at Stranatica, because he's the right size and he's the right age to have some upside as a ruckman. And you're absolutely right about Zach Strom. I love Zach Strom as a player. Unlucky not to win the Simpson medal, I think, in the in the grand final last year, takes a big mark, has a big tank. You could play him as a power forward if you need him there. You can play him in the ruck if you need him there. I think if they were to take a couple from WA, I would love to see Zach Strom be one of them. You might not go as your number one choice as your ruckman, but you might take him in case your number one choice as the ruckman falls over and you need a backup, and you might be able to find some other uses for him.
And you can play him elsewhere. I mean, he's very versatile on that front. Just going back to the Gold Coast Bulldogs, and we know we're both tipping the Bulldogs, but lighting the fire, you talk of that of St Kilda, Collingwood, Carlton. Does it ever get lit under the Gold Coast Suns?
I'm glad you mentioned that because, no, it doesn't. They're kind of out of sight, out of mind, aren't they? And maybe it's time that some serious heat came on them.
Well, where's it going to come from? Because the Victorian media, the WA media, it's not really an issue in terms of trying to spark some interest in people reading the papers or listening to TV. And the Gold Coast Bulletin up there, we know the Titans, the Gold Coast Titans, are going pretty well in the NRL. Unless they're going super up there, the Suns will get some coverage, some nice coverage. If they're falling by the wayside, there doesn't seem to be the arrows that come their way. It's more a case of, well, here's more of the same.
Yeah, exactly. And I think at some point they do have to make some headway on the competition. It's all very well. They have been more competitive so far this year, but they tend to start seasons very competitive, don't they? So they need to hang tough. They need to get a couple of players back, and they need to make some ground on the competition at some point this year. So hopefully that happens. I don't think it'll happen this week because the Bulldogs right now, Skeet, if you had to name your form team in the competition, I suspect the Bulldogs are it.
Yeah, they're it. They're one of a couple of sides. I know Melbourne hasn't beaten much, but I've put Melbourne in there in the same conversation because both midfields are going really well. Bulldogs bat a bit deeper, I think, but certainly Melbourne, and we go back to 2018, we know they've got the core there, and with Stephen May, who's out for a bit, but we'll discuss them later on. But Bulldogs certainly one of the better teams going around at the moment.
And I love their forward structure with the three talls, Josh Bruce, Aaron Norton and Tim English playing mainly forward, taking the odd run in the ruck. He's a very accomplished forward, Tim English. Still learning the ruck craft around stoppages and occasionally can get buffeted out of the way there, but certainly his ability to read the drop of the ball and then finish his work with a straight kick, I think makes him a really dangerous forward, and he kicked three against the Lions last weekend. All right, both on the Doggies. So Brisbane versus Essendon, Gabba, Saturday at 17:25. It's probably a bit earlier here. Brisbane at $1.28, Essendon $3.70. This becomes a must-win for the Lions, doesn't it?
No, 17:25 in not being an army person, but that's 5:25 our time, Duff. So that still works out at 5:25, doesn't it? Unless it's 19:25 is 7:25. So you're on the money. You're right. 5:25. Just when I finish my waffle commitments. Brisbane, Essendon. It's been a while since the Lions have been at home at the Gabba.
Yep.
This is the Joe Danaher match, I guess, in many ways, isn't it?
Yep, it is.
Look, I was impressed by Essendon. They just stuck around last Thursday night and really made it a scrap against the Sydney Swans. You talk about teams that are good and are due to turn the corner. Well, after losing to the Bulldogs in fairly comprehensive fashion, the margin wasn't, I think it was 19 points, but they were never really in the hunt in that game. The drama the previous 2 weeks with against the Collingwood side and then Geelong prior to that, I think they get back to a bit of their best this weekend. Brisbane, they're due. They know that they have to start getting some wins, particularly at home on the board, to get that momentum going. So I'm expecting them to be too good for the Bombers.
They could be 2-2 because obviously we saw what happened at the death at Geelong. They could be zipping 4.
Absolutely.
Because they're only in front after the final siren against Collingwood. So, this is a big game. I think that we will know a lot more about Brisbane after this game, whether they're coming into the mix or whether they've dropped the ball in some way. I think if the Bombers get over the top of them up there,
trouble,
then I think there's trouble. And there's a bit to like about the Bombers. I'm a bit surprised that Nick Cox wasn't the Rising Star nominee last week.
He was good, wasn't he? And he does it in the air, and he's got a few tricks up his sleeve.
Well, he played wing, ruck and key position last week and gave them something in all of those positions. To me, that's a Rising Star nom. I mean, Lachie Scholl got the Rising Star nomination, the Adelaide boy. He played against North Melbourne. Now, call me crazy, but playing well against the Swans at the SCG is a bigger ask than playing well against North Melbourne at the moment.
I was just so entranced by what Cox was doing in different areas of the ground. I thought the agility, that's a player, generational player in terms of being able to do so many things, and whether that continues. But keep an eye on him. That's a real black booker when it comes to up at the Gabba on Saturday night.
So Brisbane?
Yeah, Brisbane. The Bombers, again, brave last week on the road again. Brisbane back at home. I think it's more important for the Lions to win this one. I just think their top four chances start to become tougher by the week if they drop two matches out of their first five games of the season at home.
So Brisbane for me as well. The next one is going to be interesting because I suspect we're both going the same way and we're both going against the odds. Carlton versus Port Adelaide. It's in Melbourne. The Blues are $2.10 outsiders. Port Adelaide at $1.77. Port Adelaide will be without both Zach Butters and Xavier Dersma after them suffering, significant injuries last week. Carlton have won their last two, started to show some of the form that we think they should be capable of at the current state of list development. I'm going to tip the Blues, and I reckon you are too, Scoot. Tell me why.
Well, I've got to say exactly the same thing. Why are we tipping Carlton? On what basis? Because there's a couple of banged-up players for Port Adelaide.
It's in Melbourne.
It's in Melbourne, but let's be honest, they haven't been beaten by Carlton since 2016. They've only played just four games at the G since 2018. So if this game was at Marvel Stadium, I'd be tipping Port Adelaide, to be honest with you. I think they'd play that ground really well. Carlton turned a corner last week. Look, they've played enough good footy for mine, and I've also got a theory which is probably going to be debunked in the next three or four days, that teams that are, like, the Richmond game was quite taxing. It was almost like a final for both sides. Port Adelaide, despite dropping the match here in Perth, they've been very good all season thus far. I just wonder whether there's going to be a letdown after that game against the Tigers, more so than anything. And that, on talent, they should be winning. But Carlton, remember last year up at the Gabba, they led up until the final siren, effectively, when a bloke called Robbie Gray took a kick from near the boundary line, about 45 out, and kicked the impossible goal. So they know that they can more than match Port in a lot of areas.
Yeah, now I'm a bit like you. I have a feeling that there's going to be a bit of a letdown for Port. I also have a feeling that Port is not quite humming on the road just yet. I think, they played North Melbourne on the road first weekend. Smashed them. You can't really get any sort of a gauge on that. And obviously they came to Perth and didn't do well against West Coast. So let's see how they go on the road. But if you're Carlton and you're expecting to play finals, and I think there is an expectation of Carlton they'll play finals, really, I reckon without Butters, without Dersma, I reckon this is a game you should be winning.
Well, that's why we've tipped them. Again, we haven't consulted before we put our tips in with the West. There's a bit of a line of thought that Carlton are in this game up to their eyeballs. And look, they're a team that can let you down, and whether that's the case on Saturday night, but it's a winnable game for them. I think I agree with you on that basis.
So, folks, if Port Adelaide gets up in this game, there will be swearing on the podcast on Tuesday coming from both of us. I am the son of a darkened shearer, and you'll hear some shearing shed language from me. All right, Adelaide versus Fremantle in Adelaide on Sunday. Adelaide are $1.73, Fremantle $2.12. Pretty close in the odds. Skeet, do you give the Dockers a chance?
Well, you have to, given if you look at what they've produced in Perth, yes. If you look at what they've done this year away from home, no. It's just a case of whether Justin Lawmuir, out of nine games, they've lost eight against the Crows over the journey. The average losing margin's about 50 points. So that doesn't bode well. And I think what's helped the Crows a bit, apart from the fact that the back end of last year, the last third of the season, they played some good footy, which made you think they're going to be better this year. Crowds coming back to the Adelaide Oval, I think, is actually a real bonus for them. They love that feel at the ground. They thrive on that. Having players in form, of course, Tex Walker. We interviewed Billy Frampton on radio last night. I asked him whether, given Tex's form so good, everyone says, he's fitter, he's lost weight. I said, is that the case with Tex? He goes, no, I don't think so. It's just he's getting more of the footy and we're winning more matches. And instead of being, 0-4, we're 3-1 and life looks so much rosier for a forward. The new rules have helped. So they've got a few pluses, the Adelaide Crows, on that front, and they're playing a better brand of footy, and subsequently they're favourites on Sunday, which I think they deserve to be.
And two of the more impressive young coaches in the AFL here too. I mean, Matty Nicks may not be that young anymore, but
in terms of coaching experience.
Matty Nix's first 15 games as an AFL coach were an absolute nightmare. To hold his nerve and to produce what they produced right at the tail end of last year and be able to carry it into this year, I think is an absolute credit to him. And I think Justin Longmuir, from the minute Justin Longmuir took the reins at Fremantle, we could see what he was trying to do. Now, they haven't always done it. There have been times where it's malfunctioned, where their ball use hasn't been great. But you can see, you could see the plan in place and you could see what he was working towards. And I think their ability to create 30 scoring opportunities in two home games augurs well for them solving their big problem of last year, which was not being able to score enough. Now, they've kicked poorly, but at least they're creating the opportunities. And hopefully, if Nathan Fyfe gets another six looks at it, it won't be 0-6 this week.
Let me ask you how their forward line is going to set up the Dockers this is. Does Rory Lobb play? That's the first question. Do you think he's close enough to be on the plane?
If Rory Lobb is fit, he plays, and he plays for Fremantle. He doesn't go to Pingelly and play.
I agree with that, but yeah. The question mark is he right to go, which we may not know until selection time. What is that, Saturday evening?
Almost. I reckon. So when's their main training session? Is that today?
Sunday game, travel Friday, so.
It'll be today.
Probably today. We might know more today.
So they'll probably know tomorrow. Rory Lobb will probably pretty much do full training today, and then they will look at how he's pulled up tomorrow.
So Lobb plays if he's fit. Tracy keeps his spot after his first game.
To me, Lloyd Meek.
Darcy stays, Tabanis stays. Lloyd Meek didn't get a lot of it last week, and they have those other options. All of those other players can push forward with some degree of credibility. Meek probably doesn't have that flexibility in his game to do that. So he's the vulnerable player here, isn't he?
He is. I think so. And look, as competitive as Lloyd Meek has been at the centre bounces, Sean Darcy plays with some real authority around stoppage now. And he's able to use that left hand to you know, I wouldn't say he's got the 360 degrees like a Nick Natanui has, but he's got about 270 degrees, I reckon, with his taps. He can do the backhander. He reads the drop of the ball really well, which is why he was able to play well as a forward, because he knows where the ball's falling, even though he's not super mobile. Incidentally, Peter Sumich lit a bit of a fire under Sean Darcy when he said that he big time wants to go back to Geelong. I'm told Sean Darcy was on a rubdown table when informed of Sumich's comments and just about had to be held down on the rubdown table because was keen to go looking for Peter Sumich.
Yeah, and Sean Darcy's had a couple of moments in the last week or so when it comes to the media. He's dropped the F-bomb on radio, and he's a country boy who says his piece. Well, you talked about the light, the fire being lit under some clubs or some players. It always gets back to your duff, doesn't it? You know what? I wouldn't be – if the club knows that Sean's happy there and vice versa, then surely you just ignore that type of talk if it's unfounded.
I think they feel they're very comfortable with where Sean Darcy's at. He's contracted until the end of 2022. I think they're not quite as comfortable with some of Sumer's utterances publicly. And we might get to one of them in the Biggie Juice topic a bit later on. Hawthorn versus – we're both tipping Adelaide.
We are, but put it this way. The game played here, we'd be putting Fremantle.
Yeah. Hawthorn versus Melbourne, Sunday afternoon. Hawthorn at $4, Melbourne at $1.24. So we got a pretty clear indication of where the Hawks were at last week, didn't we? Like, they're still well coached. He can still make it hard for an opposition team to play against them, but they're in
– bottom six side.
They're in an early phase of list development.
Yeah, bottom six side. And the question mark is how much A-list talent do they have that is young? We know that Mitchell gets a ton of it, so too O'Meara. They've got some class there, but against sides that are better developed and more advanced, I think you're right. Clarko is just trying to keep the damn wall up for as long as possible, try play a defensive game. Mind you, last Sunday at Optus Stadium, the Dockers almost kicked 100 points, so it wasn't that successful. They should have been beaten by more. Another poor kicking display by Fremantle, but I'm actually on board with the Melbourne Demons after what I've seen, and I think they'll take care of Hawthorn. Christian Petrarca would have a few votes next to his name, Brownlow-wise. I like what their midfield's doing, and I think that even though Stephen May's out, pretty important, him and Lever down back, I think the Demons, it's funny, once teams start well, it's amazing that energy and that positivity, that can take you a fair way, and I think they've got that at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think This is a credibility test for Melbourne, because Melbourne in the past, this is the sort of game where they go in. Mick Boldhouse would say they spent too much time in front of the mirror in the week leading up to the game. They go into the game and they fall flat on their face. So they need to get a win out of this one. If they if they win this one, it tells you they're there most weeks and they're paying attention, and that will augur well for what they do at the end of the season, I think.
Well, I think they play finals now, having won four
yep.
from four. It's just a question of where they can position themselves. Now, if they win a game like this, they can start setting their sights just a little bit higher each and every week. And let's be honest, top four is what they would be. If you win your first four, you're hoping to finish top four from that position. So whether the Demons can maintain that momentum, I'm not sure, but I think they should be beating Hawthorn, not discounting the fact that if they get too comfortable with themselves, they are vulnerable. But we've got to stick with the team that's playing better footy.
Absolutely. Melbourne for me too. Geelong versus North Melbourne, final game on Sunday. North Melbourne is at $11 with Tab Touch. Skeet, do you give them any chance of beating the Cats, who are at $1.04?
At GMHBA Stadium, no. I mean, the Cats almost lost to Brisbane. Patrick Dangerfield returns. They've got some, speaking of getting some pressure on clubs, I imagine, what's the local paper in Geelong called?
The Addy.
The Addy. They'd be a bit just focused on the Cats at the moment and whether they've gone over the hill with age and performance. So they'll be beating North Melbourne.
A bit of aggro at the Addy.
Absolutely. I would expect a pretty decent response from the Cats.
And folks, if you're wondering where I am relative to the Geelong bandwagon, I don't even know where the bandwagon is right now.
Quick to jump off though, Duff, 4 weeks in.
Yeah, well, they've been pretty four pretty scratchy weeks.
Yeah, there have been a lot of footy clubs that have been average in the first month of a season and then come back and played a part late in September. I hope you're not going to be one of those that has a bit of egg on your face.
Well, if they turn around, I'll be finding that bandwagon and clambering back aboard, Skeet. You know how we are in the media. We're geniuses in hindsight.
Totally.
All right. It is time for the Biggie Juice Juicy Topic of the Week, brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
It's all good, baby, baby. It was all a dream. Juicy topic of the week.
So, Skeet, the scuttlebutt around is that Adam Chera has been offered $2.8 million over 4 years to join Carlton. Now, at the moment, it is just scuttlebutt. Fremantle still appears very comfortable as to where their contract negotiation is with Adam Chera. They've put a 4-year deal to him. It's been suggested that it's worth more than $2.8 million. It's been suggested that the talks will take some time, and it might be that Adam Chera and his management are waiting to see how his season pans out before they make a final call. The interesting thing for me about this is that it's Carlton, who has spent a lot of money in recent times and have Paddy Cripps to re-sign at some point. And I'm wondering whether the Carlton bid for Chera, if indeed it is more than scuttlebutt, is more let's jack the price up for Chera at Fremantle to make sure they're not a major player for Cripps later in the year.
Interesting theory. I'm not sure that the two go hand in hand, to be honest with you. I honestly think that the Dockers want to keep Chera as a priority, one of their priorities, and they're pretty comfortable with the offer that's on the table. We had a press conference with Adam about a month ago at Coburn, and quite understandably, he was non-committal about talking about contracts and where it's at. Oh, I get that, and quite justifiably so. I've just got this faith that with Justin Longmuir, Simon Garlick, and Peter Bell in charge at the Dockers, that the right environment, if you can create the right environment, a happy environment for young players, particularly non-West Australians, in this case Victorian, to play their footy with a young group around him, Caleb Sarong, Andy Brayshaw and the like, I'd be backing in Adam Chera to stay at the club. I mean, I was at the Dockers function last Sunday, the chairman's function, and Chera's parents were there. Mm. That's neither a sign of whether he's staying or going, but they came over to watch their son play. I joked, as being the MC, that, look, I've got the contract here to sign, and they had a big laugh on their face. My gut feeling is he will be at the football club next year, having signed a contract. And yeah, I'd be staggered if there weren't other clubs at least putting feelers out genuinely, or even trying to jack up the price under the Cripps scenario. But I'd be quite comfortable that he'll eventually declare his hand, that he'll be staying at Fremantle for, not sure 3 years, but I'd say a minimum of two.
Yeah, I reckon minimum two. I'm leaning towards him being there. I think he's going to be the tougher signing for them. Like, clearly he was a player who was a little bit reluctant to come when they drafted him, and they held their nerve and they read his name out anyway. Very good player. I think potentially the best of their young players. I love Andy Brayshaw's work rate. I love Caleb Sarong's feistiness around the contest, his ability to be clean in traffic. But if you want the bloke who can thread the ball through the eye of a needle, sort of like a David Mundy deliverer of the ball, user of the ball, one who makes the most of his opportunities. I think Adam Chera is that player at Fremantle. So I'm hoping they get him to the line. And certainly I'm hoping that if he does decide to go home, they make anyone who takes him back up the truck, both in terms of money and in terms of draft picks as well. I just don't see the reason I raised that about Carlton is I just don't see Carlton, with all that they've bought in and their need to re-sign Cripps, and a few guys like Sam Walsh. When Sam Walsh comes out of contract, I mean, there'll be a big truck getting backed up to Princess Park to shovel the money in. I don't see them in a position to really make a strong pitch for Adam Chera.
No, I do agree, and I don't think Cripps is going anywhere myself. So let's hope from a Fremantle perspective, because that would be a dagger, wouldn't it, to lose someone like Chera after...
It'd suck a bit of oxygen out of it. Yeah. I mean, these things you can always... I think the key for a club, if you lose a player like that, the first thing you do is ask yourself, what is our opportunity here? And we saw with the Chris Judd, Josh Kennedy trade, there is always opportunity when a big name or a high-end player leaves your club. So you can turn it to your advantage. We saw that when Tim Kelly left Geelong. So you don't sort of like throw the toys out of the cot and walk around in doom and despair. You say, okay, what is the opportunity and what can we get from this?
And do we go down the path of like for like, or do we maybe...
I reckon you go back to the draft.
Go back to the draft and try and find, hopefully, whether it's a key forward or someone that is going to suit your needs in the next 5 to 10 years. And the Dockers haven't quite nailed that key forward just yet, have they?
Well, just if you're wanting to know which way Fremantle should go on this, just be reminded of the Lachie Neale trade to Brisbane, where they had the opportunity to get two top 10 draft picks that would have given them Ben King and Connor Rosie.
And they picked up Jesse Hogan.
So
Full stop.
There's your answer right there.
And that was pressure, a lot of pressure coming from
the board.
The board, but also I think externally about getting a forward a forward ready to go to suit their needs. And history says, hindsight says that they were wrong. And the club admits that. But going forward, you need to make those mistakes less frequent. Otherwise, the chances of going up the ladder become slightly diminished.
Well, to me, what is Fremantle's potential competitive advantage over the competition? And it is if they become one of the best drafters and developers of players in the competition. They're not a destination club yet. And even West Coast, with all of West Coast's success and record and financial power and big following and those sorts of things, playing at a great stadium, as Fremantle do too, West Coast's not really a destination club. You don't have players falling out of Melbourne clubs, unless they're West Australians wanting to come home, to join West Coast. West Coast has done what it's done well because they've tended to draft and only traded for specific need when the opportunity arises.
And those draft players they've got from Victoria, they have done such a good job, and Fremantle can say the same about some of the players they've had. I mean, David Mundy, Matthew Pavlich, just to name two, have been there a long time. The Eagles... they know they can't get those Victorians across the border easily. So they therefore, at the draft, they put so much work into accommodating these young players to make it a home away from home. And the families are regarded as a family of the club automatically. So exactly right. That is the way to go forward. We're going to find it hard long term, any time, to get Victorians to come here, as you say, as a destination club. It's the draft and getting those West Australians that want to come home that are valuable for the West Coast or Fremantle.
It's time for everybody's favourite segment, and it's a big hello, Newman.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Hello, guys. Skate.
Joshy.
Duff. Just a quick one. Duff, on the back of what you were talking about, the mid-season draft with the Rucks, potentially in WA. So is this coming from just you looking at all the numbers? Do you think that, the Sandful obviously doesn't have very much, which you spoke to before?
I was talking to a recruiter yesterday, and he basically said to me, he said, if they're looking in South Australia, and he was talking about Gold Coast, he said, they're going to struggle because the last touch out of bounds rule means that there are vastly fewer stoppages around the ground, which diminishes the need for a ruckman.
Substantially, you'd think too, probably about 60% of the...
Yep.
The ruck tips.
So they look for smaller mobile players who can contribute basically as an extra midfielder. And that means if there is a ruckman taken from a second tier competition other than the VFL, the chances are it's going to be the Waffle. And given that they have four spots on their list and right now they don't have a ruckman, they might not just take one, they might take two or three.
But what about the VFL? Does that have?
I'm not actually across whether there is an up and coming ruckman from the VFL. Maybe they would take one from the Waffle. Maybe they would take one from the VFL. Maybe there's one other floating around somewhere. I know that Sam Jacobs is still playing footy in the country somewhere, so they might look at a Sam Jacobs and think, let's try and get him to get us through to the end of the season.
Alex Rance, maybe just chuck him in there.
He's done. You know, he's putting the hand up. You know, who would love to come back and has played 300 plus games and not a ruckman?
Carlton?
Yes, Cade Simpson.
That's right. He was on Dylan Buckley's podcast saying that he's ready.
Yeah. Now, whether that was tongue in cheek, may well have been, but.
No, he was adamant.
It's not. I mean, you can envisage in your wildest dreams that could take place for a club that is bereft of a midfielder or even more a sort of a halfback, but someone who's got some run and needs that sort of leg speed.
That's right. If you're on the cusp of it,
he's in the right age demographic for Geelong.
Exactly.
Be a young up and comer at Geelong.
The nursing home,
guys. It pains me. It pains me every time these last couple of weeks I've had to dish out a compliment to Skeet. We've had another bit of family.
Well, my twin daughters say the same. It pains me to give you a compliment, Dad.
Well, Adam from Collie begs to differ. So Adam says, I'm from Collie, just west of Duffield Land. I recently worked on the renovations of the Darkin football club rooms.
Right.
So very close to home. Just wanted to pump up Mr. Golden Tonsils and request that he join the podcast full time. It could be Duff Quarters featuring Skeet.
Sort of like that band where you get the bloke come in and little cameo performance.
Yeah, just a little rap, add a two-par rap in the back.
And 50 Cent. Skate, yeah, that'd be me, yeah. Oh,
good throwback.
A few good men, I don't know. I'm just helping out some brothers in arms, and that's Quarters has been away for a while, and Duff and I used to talking dribble over everything but a microphone, so we're fine with that.
Usually a few beers.
Yeah, that's right. I think you'd be great in the room. He continued to say also that the Swamp Thing was on the Hardball Gets podcast. He would also be a good addition. Oh, anyways, really love the show, and a big shout out to the biggest podcast producer in Oz, and I only mean by height. So thank you very much just deleting that one, Adam.
Yes, we all look up to Josh.
Yeah, that's right. And his funky hairdo.
So far, yeah. Adam from London. We get an international flair as always. Currently living in London. Love the podcast each week. Had a question for the lads. I'm a West Coast supporter and have concerns around Jack Petrocelli, or as me and my friends have started calling him Meat Meep, as in Roadrunner. Although he has pace and did have a good first half against the Saints in the weekend, I just think he lacks footy smarts and actually finding the football. It's all well and good being quick, but it's actually finding the footy and consistency that needs to be more important. I know he is young, and hopefully my concerns will be proven wrong as he plays more footy, but how do you think we will view him as a player in 5 years' time?
That's a good call. And talking to some people at West Coast, that is the problem. The game has to come to him a bit because he struggles to find where to go and struggles to read the play. He certainly had I think that's his most impressive game. Again, I know he
better than Port Adelaide, Good Friday, 5
against
goals.
Port Adelaide, he just got out the back.
Yeah,
didn't
true.
He?
Two or three times probably, yeah.
And once he gets out goal side of you, you're not running him down.
You want him in the side playing well because he gives you that excitement, that leg speed that the Eagles, let's be honest, don't have a lot of. And in fact, a lot of sides don't have a player like Jack Petrocelli who's so quick. I mean, Jyath for Hawthorn. There's
Michael Frederick.
Michael Frederick.
Wasn't that a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think you're never going to see him with 20-plus disposals week in, week out, kicking two or three goals. Look, ideally, to get his 15 touches and kick two goals would be great, and playing a role that he is accustomed to and gets familiar with. But, yeah, I don't think you're going to see that level of consistency out of Jack just yet.
But in 2 years' time, is Jack Petrocelli going to be part of West Coast Best 22?
Well, I would suspect that he has to be. Otherwise, his career is going to be elsewhere. I mean, I'll back him in. But you're right, there's a real roller coaster at the moment. His best, though, is good enough.
Yeah, he was great in the first half the other week. And I loved that passage of play where he got involved three times. That to me is a guy who may be just starting to understand, okay, I can get in there and I can get that one back.
Penny's dropping.
And once I get that back, no one's going to catch me. He circumnavigated the bloke who came to tackle him. He just went, I don't even have to dodge around you, mate. I'm just going to run past
you.
So he's an exciting player, and I think he's good enough to be in their best 22 in 2, 3, 4 years' time.
Adam also had a quick shout-out to Christy Cavs, who is a listener back in Perth. Thank you very much, Adam, all the way from London. I also asked him as a follow-up, how do you watch games over there? Apparently there's a league pass, and it's quite affordable, $190 Australian a year.
That's cheap.
But it's only to international. So you could probably find a way around that if you had a VPN in Australia. But it's pretty good option, because I know it used to be quite expensive when I was living overseas a long time ago.
VPN, I'm a bit lost with the technology. But that's $190. You'd go to great lengths if you're overseas, if you love your footy,
yeah,
to try to just get a taste of what you're missing.
Yeah, I didn't quite know how people do it. So thank you for the clarification, Adam. Clay from Forestfield. Hi, guys. Love the podcast. I've noticed in the past few weeks with boundary throw-ins that ruckmen are grabbing the ball and are immediately being tackled. It used to be instant holding the ball for this situation. Has the rule changed?
Yes, it has. And there was a lot of talk about Tom Hickey's taking clean possession against Essendon last week and probably having time to do something with
afterwards
it.
Afterwards even.
And then getting grabbed and not being pinged. That rule has changed. We discussed this a little bit, didn't we? We don't know why it changed. Was there any problem with it before?
No, I saw the incident with Hickey, and even still being told about the change in rule, and just reminding me, I still think he had a chance to, once he took possession, he had a couple of steps. So for me, that was holding the ball.
Yep.
I do get that they're trying to allow Ruckman to take possession and then maybe straight away lay it off, but I'm not sure why the rule was changed.
It's changed, yeah, you're right, to try and shift the ball from congestion and from the stoppage. But if you encourage them to tap it and you make it very clear that your prior is gone if you take clear possession, then they will tap. And I suspect it doesn't change the dynamics around the stoppage much, and all it does is make it more difficult for the umpire to determine whether there is prior opportunity. But whereas before, the decision was made for him, wasn't it? If you grab it, you've had your prior.
Gone.
Good question. Just a quick one about your obsession with turning left. We discussed it earlier, but our mate from Shelter Brewing, Tom, has said, on a side note, I have a listener's question. Can Duff please explain the turning left affinity?
Well, there are more right footers than left footers. And so subconsciously, as we go through the ranks, and Skeet and I only got partway through before we got tossed out by the talent pathway. But as players develop as footballers, they learn to subconsciously lean to a right footer as opposed to a left footer. So left footers always have that extra bit of time and space because they're just going in a direction that the player subconsciously isn't expecting them to go in. It means that being left footed and slow is a little bit more forgiving than being right footed and slow. That's basically how it is.
Hope that clarifies for you, Tom. And our final one, John from Calgary, Canada.
Oh, yeah.
All over the world, Skate.
Love it. Go to the Canucks.
The Canucks are in Vancouver.
Yeah, I'm saying, but the Canadian. Oh, well, Calgary. I was born there, but I got no idea about the
Calgary Flames, mate. Come on.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry. Emailing from Calgary after hearing comments.
You'd need a fire in Calgary too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. My brother was born there. Crazy. Comments about advantage of the Swans Academy. He just wanted to say, I won't say that there isn't an advantage, as there's always the chance to match bids. Swans, Heaney, Mills, Blakely, etc. I just wanted to also point out some things. Sam Wicks was part of the academy but was picked as a rookie. Goulden was taken with pick 32. And either way, Swans fans, of course, love seeing it, and in Victorian clubs also getting outraged about it. That's fantastic. He just wanted to point it out that even though these guys have turned out to be very good, they were pretty deep in the draft, a lot of them.
Yeah, so, and I made this clear when I wrote the column, which has lit a fire under Swans fans. look, we understand why they have academies. We think academies are good for football. It just gives them an advantage. And even, let's go back to Goulden and Wicks. I did acknowledge in the column that Wicks is a rookie, acknowledge that Goulden was pick 32. There's a lot of guesswork when you take picks down the order in a draft. But if you've had the kid in your academy for 5 years, the guesswork is gone. You know exactly how good he is. And the Swans knew exactly how good Errol Goulden was in particular. The rest of the competition didn't. Mm. And that's where they had the advantage. Errol Goulden in that draft is probably a top 20 draft pick.
Mm.
And they got him at pick 32. They knew they wanted to take him. They knew how good he was. They knew him better than anyone.
And that came particularly from the year of COVID-19, where there wasn't this interstate competition where he would have probably had a blowout under 18 tournament.
Yep, correct. So that's where the advantage is. And good for football? Absolutely. Fair on the rest of the competition? Probably not.
Thank you, John. He just finished off by saying, I had spent some time in WA and East Coast and now living in Canada. I love the podcast. Thank you, everyone that emailed in. Get them in for Tuesday. Yeah, we have a bit of a giveaway on Tuesday too, a book about a waffle legend. So get in some good.
I'm thinking is it Bill Dempsey?
Billy Dempsey?
It is Billy Dempsey. We've been donated a book to give away. So if you are interested in some good local writing.
Tell you what, he played a lot of footy before my time, but apparently a lovely man and a super footballer. So it'd be a great read.
So 1975 grand final, which I watched standing on an esky in the forward pocket at Subiaco Oval with a record crowd of 52,000. Bill Dempsey and Mel Winnan as the Cardies, as they were known in that period, absolutely destroyed South Fremantle.
Thanks to a guy called Barry Day, who kicked 7 goals in the last quarter.
But the two stars over 4 quarters were Mel Winnan and Bill Dempsey. And I actually had a beer with Bill Dempsey at a mate's bar in Subiaco going back about probably just over a year ago. And a more charming man you will not meet. He was magnificent. He came. He must live around there somewhere. He came down. Apparently, he comes down and has a red wine occasionally at the bar. We sat and had a good chat, and just an absolute gentleman, great bloke, and was an absolute star player.
So he originally came to Perth as like an add-on player with the signing, wasn't he? He ended up being a...
That's right. So there was another guy came down from Darwin who they wanted, and Bill came along as his like stable pony.
Steak and knife sort of extra, yeah.
And ended up becoming the champion while the other guy went home. It's called The Boy from Burden.
The Boy from Burden, and there's a copy up for grabs, so get your questions in for that for Tuesday.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Hopefully you tip a winner. Hopefully your team goes very well. Hopefully Skeet won't be as distraught about his tips when we are back talking to you on Tuesday, and hopefully we're not swearing about cars. Carlton.
Don't hold your breath.
We have been brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Gamble responsibly and please call Gamblers Helpline on 1800 858 858. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Skeet. See you on Tuesday.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on The Game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.